The Good Neighbor Network. FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro. FM 100.5 Smyrna. And online at WGNSradio.com.
To political stuff that's not opinion-based, because everyone's got an opinion. No one's right. We don't have all the information. We don't know all their hidden agendas. But this is an interesting article from Forbes talking about the two political or presidential candidates in regards to saving Social Security, which I don't think they have even concocted a plan to save Social Security, because deep down, they realize how it can be saved, and that is you have to change the parameters of how you receive it. Either you have to raise the taxes to get more income coming into the system, which is just total crap, right? Because just if you just do the numbers, the money you've put into the system and what you receive back, you'd be far better off if the system didn't exist. But what's the upside there is that a lot of people that do receive Social Security benefits wouldn't have put that money aside themselves. So this forced them to have something. We're not debating whether that's, you know, it's just, but now we're in the situation now, about 10 years or so, the forecast that there will not be enough money coming into Social Security to match the outflow. Fact one, Social Security is very important for most people. Almost 80% of those between 65 and 80 said they have enough money to live comfortably. I guess that's outside. Fact two, Social Security Trust is running dry. One reason, current non-retirees have a dour outlook on Social Security. The Social Security Trust Fund will soon run out of money. The 2024 Trustees Report shows that the Old Age Survivors Insurance Trust Fund or deplete in 2023. I believe that's the disability side. Social Security is progressive. Lower earning Americans see more of their income replaced by Social Security than those of higher. So what is the left side, the Democrat plan for Social Security? Let's see if we can get into it. She hasn't yet outlined how she plans on making Social Security more solvent. Shocker there. No shocker there. There's not a whole lot of policy substance on that side of the political spectrum. Not that there's a whole lot on the other. Let's see. The goal dovetails with a plan the Biden-Harris team produced during the 2020 election, which proposed raising benefits for those for lowering earners while raising taxes on wealthier earners. It would do this by creating a donut hole that would evaporate over time. This would work by making Americans earning more than $400,000 subject to Social Security taxes while keeping the taxable maximum level unchanged. So that's the solution. That's really it. It tax more, at least a certain group or everyone, more payroll taxes for the employee and or the employer. Because that's how the system works. If you work for an employer, they pay half of the payroll taxes. You pay the other half, and payroll taxes are your Social Security and Medicare withholding. So you raise that rate, or those who are younger, 30, 40, whatever, 20. So, well, you can't get benefits until you're age 70, where now the earliest age to start taking benefits is age 62. So they're going to manipulate those things. Nothing to do about it. Former President Trump has spent much of his current campaign defending himself from incorrect claims that he plans to cut Social Security benefits. I don't think anyone's silly enough to believe that's true. Political suicide. Republicans say they will restore economic stability to ensure the long-term sustainability of social. This sounds like political speak there. Even if Trump makes good on his plan to grow the economy, such as expanding oil and gas drilling, Social Security is facing hard demographic truths. There are simply too many people retiring and too few workers to support them. And that's, you know, the baby, that's that one of the downsides. We have people, the baby boom generation, it was a huge part of our economy. And if they retire, they start draining the Social Security system. But they shouldn't be just called draining. That's a total misrepresentation, right? Because it's really your money. It's half of your money and half of your employer's money with whatever growth rate. I know it's been done, but I think it'll just make you sick that if you just said, yeah, I paid in all this money to the Social Security system throughout these years, and that would be equal to, let's say, $5,000 a month for income adjusted for inflation for life, and you retire and you get $2,500 or, you know, get half of what you're entitled to. I don't want to see those numbers because it doesn't matter. You have to pay into the system. It's taxation. It is redistribution of wealth at its best. Is it a necessary evil? You got to look at it like this. What if the people who have nothing else other than Social Security, or very little in addition to their Social Security income at retirement, what if they actually had nothing? Who would be supporting them then? So if we play that game, it's going to get ugly really, really fast. We can't undo history. Well, we can change tax laws. Well, we can't undo what's already been done. Social Security is not going away. A botched plan? Probably. It's just, it was never a sustainable thing, and I think they knew that. So it's helped some and it's hurt some. There's good, there's bad. So what will happen to Social Security? I'm going to tell you my opinion on it. And I've said this for 20 years. Anything, any benefit that is backed up by the taxing power of the U.S. government, they're not worried. They'll just raise taxes. What is this, like 7.65% is the part that everyone pays? And I find this funny. It's not really a progressive thing, right? And this really just occurred to me. They're progressive, meaning everybody's got to pay into it. It doesn't matter if you make low income or high income. Now, there's even a cap if you make a lot of income. You don't pay into it to the full amount of your income, which I think that's weird. And only to make it fair is that, well, these people will never see the benefit if they keep paying this high amount. But the payroll taxes are just a percentage. They're not more for the wealthier and lower for the lower income. Like the progressive income tax system, you know, that doesn't make it. Basically, the Social Security taxes are flat tax. So some people believe in flat tax for certain things and not a flat tax for the other. As I say all the time, this only has to do with money and votes. They ultimately, you know, they care to some level, but they know that this isn't going to impact them or their friends or their families for the most part. Their constituents, yes, but they ultimately only care about fixing whatever their constituents want fixed so they can get the vote. Then it turns into money and power, and that's the way the political system rolls. Hate to hurt your feelings, no matter how much you love your candidate. That's just the reality of it. Sorry, folks. All right, after this break, we'll talk estate planning. Very good estate planning discussion coming up with John Baker, estate planning attorney. You do not want to miss it. This is Financial Coaching Radio.
Is stressful, and so is shopping for a mortgage. Take my advice and get a second opinion on the mortgage for your new home or your refinance. Not all banks and mortgage companies are created equal. Trust me on this. Call my friend Marshall Sparkman with Franklin Synergy Bank at 615-439-0885. great team, great process, and the best rates. Marshall Sparkman with Franklin Synergy Bank at 615-439-0885.
Would you trust your doctor or surgeon if they had never been to medical school? Of course not. So why trust your financial future to a financial advisor with little training or education? Anyone can call themselves a financial planner or a financial advisor, but a certified financial planner has been extensively trained. My name is Jason Qualls, and I am one of just a few certified financial planners in this area. So ask your current advisor about their education and training. Then call me, Jason Qualls, certified financial planner at 878-2134, or go to jasonquallscfp.com.
Coaching Radio. We'll move on to estate planning discussion in this segment with John Baker, estate planning attorney, BakerCounsel.com. John, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jason. Always great to be here.
All right. The question I have pending for you today, it's a couple of them. Let's start with a will. And when a key person, one of the key people in a will is the executor. That is the person who carries out everything the will says, right? That's a basic overview.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What if someone wants to have more than one executor? Is that advisable? What are the pros? What are the cons? And we'll do the same discussion. What if you have more than one power of attorney and they're equals? And same thing on the healthcare directive.
Right. So, you know, as far as the executor of a will, of course, the executor, while it may be nominated in the will, the court actually appoints and approves that person.
So will just not, it's not a definite.
That's right. That's right.
That's bizarre, right?
Yeah.
That you say who it is, and then the court has to still approve it.
That's right. It goes through the court process. The will has to be authenticated and admitted to court, and the court officially appoints the person, typically named in the document, unless there was some reason that person shouldn't serve. But if you have two, then the court will approve two. And I guess there's nothing, you know, really, you know, inherently wrong with that, but it can result in, you know, two people having to have approvals to do things and you know, take care of accounts, and whereas, you know, instead of just having one do it. And but I think it's largely personal preference in the context of the will. Now, if you're talking about a power of attorney,
if someone names, let's say they have two children, mm-hmm. and they're going to name little Bobby and little Susie as equal executors in their will. And so the court, they approve those people. Does that happen, right, or are they going to say, no, we're not doing two people, we're going to do one? The court like that?
No. If two are there and there's not, you know, any reason to do otherwise, the court's typically going to appoint those two people.
Do they have to agree on everything? What if they disagree on something?
Yeah,
is there that not really the case, since the will just lines it out what they're supposed to do?
Well, let's say the two executors appointed are also the children, and they are beneficiaries. And somewhere along the line, they do have a dispute. Maybe it's over their particular share or what to do with the house or something like that. So if
that's usually what it is, right? It's real estate, right?
Right.
One person wants to keep it, one person wants to sell it.
So if there's a dispute and they can't resolve it between themselves, you know, then it's going to end up back in court. And that also puts the lawyer in a predicament, because the lawyer was representing both of them, probably, and now they have a dispute. Well, the lawyer can't get in the middle of that dispute. He would have a conflict of interest. He's got to be impartial to both clients. So that is a potential when you have, you know, two people acting as the executor.
Yeah, that was my thinking. So it just sounds like it could get ugly fast.
Yeah.
And so typically, if you're married, your spouse, surviving spouse, will be the first executor, then maybe a child, and then the other child may be a backup to that person.
Right.
That's typically how it rolls.
And I think maybe when parents name, you know, two children or three children to be the executor.
Three, you could see that being.
And I've seen three in a will.
Wow.
I think they're trying not to hurt or offend a child.
Right.
But I really think the better approach, as opposed to trying to do that, because that can get unworkable and impractical, is to, you know, just simply tell the children, well, you know, I'm appointing Johnny. He's local. You know, you live in Atlanta. You're three right. hours away. And, you know, Johnny's a CPA or, you know, whatever. You know, some, just explain. There's a logic. It's not out of a lack of love and affection. It's just that I think he or she is in a better position to do it. And now, if you're talking about a financial power of attorney.
Yeah, so that's the yeah. hiccups you run into by naming equal executors. So let's talk right. about on the financial side of a power of attorney.
Now, and Jason, you might can speak to this. You may see it more than I do. But financial companies, in my impression, you know, I say financial companies, banks, brokerages, they're not really a fan of multiple agents under power of attorney.
I've never had it come up, actually. Yeah. You know, it's usually, I would assume, well, you would know. So you're the power of attorney for someone on the finance mm-hmm. side. You just prove the document is there, and they pretty much allow you to have authority. They don't. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's a conversation that's being had behind the scenes right. with the financial yeah. company and whoever has been named.
Yeah, and I think that I think more likely than not, when you have that, the bank or financial institution in most cases is going to want two sign-offs on
everything
pretty much, anything of significance.
So you go to make a withdrawal. Both people have to sign. Yeah, you go to sell an asset, whatever, yeah. two people have to approve it, right? Yeah. That's what yeah. we're getting
at. And, you know, I typically...
And what if one doesn't agree with it? That's yeah. that's the thing.
Yeah, so I tell you what I like to do, again, where it fits the client and the case, it is to name, like you were saying earlier, the primary and an alternate situation where you have one serving. But some people will want two. Maybe it's a checks and balance. Maybe they just want both their children on it because they don't want to offend one of the children. But I like to, where possible, just list one and then have the alternate. I think it's
and then in a legal dispute, let's just we talked about on the executor mm-hmm. side, so they're going to have a dispute. On the power of attorney side, what do they just sue to get one removed? What's the solution?
Let's say that we have a flip side to having just one is, well, what if the one commits fraud or embezzlement or something? You know, then they say, well, if we had two, we'd have check and balance. So you can get to some debates like that. But if you ultimately have a dispute between two, you know, acting agents under a power of attorney, yet, you know, they're going to have to resolve their difference somehow between them, or whoever they're dealing with is not going to do it. You know, if it's a bank or real estate or whatever, they're going to say, look, either both of you sign or we're not going to do this transaction.
Right.
Which could end up in court, I guess, in the worst case scenario. But
I see the side that, well, if one person views as the decision that's being made is inappropriate, and they're just standing right. up and say, I don't agree with that. Right. But if it's just, well, they just view it as unfair for them.
Right. Yeah.
Because maybe they have an interest yeah. in the asset. Then, right. then that just turns into a whole different situation.
Yeah, it's hard to avoid those things sometimes. I think, you know, your best approach is, you know, just to make sure the client is designating the most appropriate people, the people or person that...
Because those jobs aren't fun.
There's no glory.
Right. Especially the executor part.
And I'll tell that to the children sometimes. I mean, it's not unusual for me where I may have two of them as the executors, and maybe one of them lives in, you know, Florida, and one lives in, the other one lives here in Tennessee. And sometimes I'll tell them, I say, look, you know, there's no glory being added into this duty. You know, if you know, it's okay if you want to let your sibling in Tennessee handle it, because it's actually just work, you know, really. They still have to follow the rule and be right. fair to the beneficiary and, you know, things like that.
Yeah, it's just when that child's, usually they're going to be the beneficiary of the asset. One is a conflict of interest in that sense. So yeah. if you have two people, well, one is a conflict, you know, if one is a benefit, two people are beneficiaries, but one is the power of attorney, that could get ugly in a certain yeah. sense. Yeah. Same thing. There is no... There's not a cure-all for it.
No, there's not. I guess the cure-all might be to appoint an independent
right.
agent.
That's not a beneficiary.
Right, but that agent may very well be somebody expecting compensation, a lawyer, an accountant, a bank.
It's a third party. I get asked all the time, and I don't really know the legal answer. I just decline because I view it as a conflict of interest in some ways. People ask me, well, can you do it as their financial planner? Mm-hmm. Is that advisable or is that even legal?
I would never do it.
In the case.
I don't know if it, what, you know, it may entangle up into some of the, you know, the financial ethical rules that you all have to follow. I don't know the answer.
Yeah,
to
I view it, whether it's just written hard, that plain and simple. I'd view it as an ethical conflict.
Right, right. But it is fraught with risk though, because now you have dual roles, and what
right.
if those roles conflict? That's what I tell clients when they ask me to be their power agent under power of attorney or be their executor. I really encourage them to try to appoint somebody else because. I'm just trying to avoid those dual roles. Not that I can't do it, but where possible, I try to avoid it. Occasionally, I get the person that, I mean, they have no family. They really don't have money to appoint a bank. And I may agree to take a role, but that's somewhat rare.
What about on the healthcare side? You name two equal healthcare agents. That one I don't see as being, if it's family, children especially, I don't see that one being as muddy as the finance part or the executor part.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. You know, you probably get different opinions on this, but I have rarely seen it a problem. You know, it could be if the co-agents have disagreements on the
type end of life care, type stuff. Yeah.
End of care, yeah, usually end of life type decisions, but. But in my experience, that they like the idea of having the children on there, and a lot of times, in a very intact, loving family, we do it kind of an or, any of the children, because you never know who will be available, during a health crisis. Maybe one of the children.
I still
here.
See that being like,
that,
you did what while I was gone?
That's right. So it's, I mean, there's potential for issues there, but I've seen more problems dealing with banks and real estate than I have in the health arena. Not that it doesn't happen in the health arena, but because
ultimately the hospital, they have some legal liability there, and they're very hesitant to do anything because they don't want to get sued.
That's right, yeah.
John Baker, estate planning attorney. We'll be back right after this and continue this discussion. If you have any estate planning or financial planning questions, hit email the show at financialcoachingradio.com.
A recent undercover study found that over 89% of paid tax preparers made mistakes. You heard me right, over 89%. Is your tax person making mistakes? Tax mistakes cost you money and may even lead to an IRS audit. I recommend you get a second opinion on your tax return today by calling Tuthero Helen Welch CPAs at 848-1072. Tuthero Helen Welch has been providing tax services to individuals and businesses for over 50 years. So call them today at 848-1072 or go to thwcpa.com. Get a second opinion. Get a second opinion. Get a second opinion. I'm Jason Qualls, commission-free certified financial planner. I can't stress enough how important it is for you to get a second opinion on your investments and financial plan. Unfortunately, since most financial advisors care more about selling you financial products than providing objective advice, it can be hard for you to know who has your best interest in mind. Call me, Jason Qualls, a commission-free certified financial planner for a free no-obligation investment review at 878-2134 or go to my website, jasonquallscfp.com. You have worked your entire life for what you have, and you deserve to determine how your assets are passed on to your loved ones. Make sure your estate plan is in order by calling John Baker, estate planning attorney, today at 896-5621. Estate planning is not about you, but those you leave behind. For more, go to bakercounsel.com or call 896-5621.
Monday through Friday, 4 o'clock right here on WGNS. I'm your host, Jason Qualls, Certified Financial Planner. Jason Qualls, CFP.com for all about me. Still going to continue on in discussing estate planning. Recent article coming out about the Michael Jackson estate. He's been dead since 2009. They're still debating how to handle his assets.
Wow.
And it's about his $600 million music catalog.
Well,
the latest development came August 21st when a California appellate court approved a $600 million sale of assets proposed by the Jackson's estate. Michael Jackson's estate offers a lesson for anyone thinking about writing a will, even if they don't have that level of wealth. When Jackson signed his will in 2002, he left almost everything to his children through a trust. His mother has a small interest during her lifetime. His will also included a common provision that empowered his executors to sell the estate's assets upon such terms as they seemed best. Any proceeds from the sale would be distributed to his children. That seems pretty cut and dry, right?
Yeah.
It's just they don't want, somebody doesn't want it sold, I guess, is the thing.
Yeah, so that I think that, like they were saying, those are provisions that would be typical in a lot of wills.
You've seen that before? Just whatever the executor thinks is best?
That's right. Now, in certain situations, certain jurisdictions, you know, to sell particularly real estate, you may have to get a court approval. And if if there is an objection, maybe there somebody was objecting in Michael Jackson's case, that can end up into the court, you know, to kind of sort that out.
Yeah, it's coming down to that his mother says that Michael told family members prior to his death that his assets should never be sold. So the will is saying one thing, and then the private conversation is saying the other. So we can see how the court has upheld this thing.
And like you said, this is not small dollars. So
yeah, this is just
this
the catalog.
Is not, I say that may be typical language in a will, but this is not a typical estate with $600 million just in song rights or whatever, recording rights.
And that's a thing, right? Well, right. You could claim whatever, right? In the estate planning world, no one can prove that he didn't say that. You're just not likely to have a whole lot of headway if the document is pretty clear, right?
Yeah. So typically,
could you actually pull it through the court system and then ended up settling out of court and get something for it? Or?
Yeah. But the way that typically works in court is that if the language is plain and clear, you can't present extraneous statements to contradict it. Now, where there might be an ambiguity, other statements can be brought in. So, you know, is there an ambiguity here that will allow the court to consider what maybe Michael Jackson said in another context?
An estate plan is only enforceable if formalized in a document such as a will.
Yeah, and of course, with the will, you know, there are strict formalities to in Tennessee, you know, it's got to be witnessed by two witnesses, signed in front of the person and at the same time as the person. So,
but also this article, well, no, we don't know what's true.
Right.
It says that he left everything to his children through a trust, and then it keeps referencing this will.
Right.
The trust would have its own language that would supersede the will in most cases, right?
Right.
What if you had a, let's just say, a revocable trust, and it has one plan for your assets, and then you have a, I guess it's called a pour over will, I think is the legal term as well. And they say something different, or is there a way that those two documents could conflict and cause some legal dispute?
Well, if the will has a different disposition in some manner than the trust,
or can you have a valid will and a valid trust at the same time?
Well, you can, and normally you will have a will and a trust if you're doing a trust plan. But if the asset is owned by the trust, in other words, it's titled to the trust, then I think that trust in most cases is going to govern that, unless there's something strange going on in the case, because the asset is owned by the trust and governed by the trust. Now, if the asset was out of the trust and the will said to do something else with that asset, then the will may control there. So part of that just may depend on how the asset is titled when the person died.
So titling would, because if it's not titled in the trust name, it's not going to go through the trust, no matter what that document
is. Now, the pour over
will. How would you title an asset catalog into the name of the trust? It's not like a hard asset with a deed, right?
I'm sure there's some contractual something assignment, you know.
Right.
Yeah, you know, something that would do that. I don't know anything about
Surely
how those types of assets are owned and all of that. I know it's complicated. Didn't he sell a lot of his stuff to like Sony or didn't? Wasn't there some deal with that?
I was thinking about
it gets
that.
It's complicated.
Well, he owned, as far as I know, if I remember correctly, he owned the catalog of the Beatles.
Okay.
Now, I think they've already sold that off.
Okay.
I think the Beatles tried to buy it back. Paul McCartney, I'm not sure. But yeah, Michael had owned the catalog of the Beatles somehow.
Wow. That's,
so this is just
impressive.
For his, right.
Again, not the typical estate.
Right. So that's already been sold, but I could be misremembering that. John Baker, estate planning attorney, BakerCouncil.com. Office is right here in Middle Tennessee, Murfreesboro, Rutherford County. 896-5621 is the phone number, 896-5621. John, I appreciate you being here today.
All right, great. Jason, thanks. Great as always.
All right. Check us out online, financialcoachingradio.com. We'll be back right after this.
Would you like your business to be more efficient? Well-organized financial records are the foundation of any successful business. Take an advantage over your competition today by calling Tuthero Helen Welch CPAs at 848-1072. They can provide you with expert bookkeeping, payroll services, tax planning, and much, much more. Go to thwcpa.com or call them at 848-1072 today.
We're News Radio WGNS, 100.5, 101.9, 1450, online and on your phone at WGNSradio.com.
Do you have a financial plan? I'm not talking about a worthless binder full of pretty charts and graphs. Are you certain you're on track to reach all your financial goals? A comprehensive financial plan is about so much more than just your IRA and mutual funds. It involves risk management, tax planning, professional investment management, retirement, and estate planning. Make sure your entire financial life is in order by calling me, Jason Qualls, a commission-free certified financial planner at 878-2134 or go to my website, jasonquallscfp.com.
Coaching Radio, and myself is back with you just for a few more minutes. Appreciate you listening today and every day. I am Jason Qualls, certified financial planner, jasonquallscfp.com for all about me. Make sure you're only hiring independent, fee-only certified financial planner. Interestingly enough, Forbes Personal Finance recently put out an article, and I've been saying this for a long time, a decade. If you just do a quick search of how to pick the best financial planner or advisor, you're going to come across the same information. They're never going to tell you to go work with these commission guys. They're very rarely going to tell you to go work with fee-based guys. They're most of the time going to tell you, unless it's someone that has a hidden agenda, that fee-only is the right way to go. And it just makes total common sense. You know it. I know it. They know it. Everyone knows it. Now, how you pay your fee-only person, whether it's a flat fee by the hour or percentage of your assets, that's totally negotiable and up to you. But what you're trying to do as the client, and even as the advisor, is remove conflicts of interest. That is it. Someone who has an incentive to get you to invest in a certain product or investment over another one, how do you know if that recommendation is what's best for you versus what's best for them in their company? Fee only, independent, CFP, Jason Qualls, CFP.com for more. Listen to the show anytime, anywhere. If you can't catch us every weekday at 4 o'clock right here on WGNS, that website is financialcoachingradio.com. I'm back at you tomorrow, same time, same channel. Keep it locked in on the local talk station, WGNS.